the CU 2.0 podcast.
Getting to that launch day, I'm going to tell you, was like a huge day because it was 3 years in the making. And we really thought that first week we would just have enough traffic to generate interest of joining the movement, because we had different workflows set up for every stage. The first stage was joining the movement, where we'd get their name and email address, and then we would nurture them to take the quiz, savings quiz, and then nurture them to actually meet with a money coach. What we didn't foresee was that it would take off so fast that we were literally having to pull a couple of our market managers aside and say, we need you two to reach out to these first 12 members who have already signed up for meeting with a money coach, and we had only been launched a few days.
Do you want to talk about money, or would you prefer to talk about sex? Many of us today would choose the sex conversation, mainly because we know we don't know much about personal finance, and we also know we don't know anybody to ask for advice. Enter Tropical Financial in Florida, which has introduced a new website, Get Beyond Money, where the purpose is to provide people, target audiences, older millennials, with the financial education they need and want so that they can make smarter, shrewder financial decisions. The website has plenty of blogs, quizzes, even offers a free appointment with a financial counselor. This podcast offers an insider's view of how this campaign was created, and no, it was 3 years in the making. There were stumbles along the way, but that enriches the story. You really get to hear what it's like to create some intellectually inspiring content. Also know that Tropical Financial is willing to share its content with non-competitive credit unions. Don't be shy about asking. You'll hear the invitation in this podcast. Today's guest is Amy McGraw, the first repeat podcast guest. Last year, she starred in episode 10 on the student loan crisis and what Tropical Financial is doing to help. Now she's leading the charge in bringing meaningful financial education to older millennials who, in many cases, really don't know who to ask for advice. Tropical Financial wants to step into that role. This is the CU 2.0 podcast. This is your host, Robert McGarvey. You know who today's guest is, Amy McGraw. Listen up to the Get Beyond Money podcast.
So tell me about this Beyond Money campaign. Where did the idea come from? Et cetera, et cetera.
Oh boy, I'll tell you what, this has been an idea in the making for 3 years. And I know that sounds like a really long time, but it was, we originally, do you remember the Young and Free platform with credit unions? There was Young and Free Alberta, Young and Free Michigan. We did Young and Free Florida, where we had hired a spokesperson to kind of connect with millennials and create content and blog and vlog and all this other stuff. Well, we did that from 2012 to 2014. And then as blogging became less popular of an activity to do, and people were getting more involved with, you know, short storytelling, we started losing interest, or we had our millennial audience started losing interest in Young and Free. So we tried these other cartoon content, but it wasn't as engaging as having our own person talk to people. And so we approached an agency that was down here in Florida, and we kind of came up with this idea, which originally was called Millennial U. It was a really bad name, but the idea basically was to create a sort of a college-like online platform for people to learn things, take exams, and the big twist was that if you passed a certain, let's say, track of classes, then you would get discounts on products and services, because we felt confident that you are ready to have this XYZ product. The problem was the agency, the person who originally was there that we worked with, quit the agency, and the agency sort of fell apart. And so the idea fell apart with it. So we went on to another agency who we tried to explain our idea, and they came up with another platform. But again, it didn't really fulfill what we were trying to do. So that fell apart. So we were getting pretty discouraged that maybe we just were not going to be able to pull this idea off. And then we connected with Digital Growth Institute and James Robert Lay.
Oh, sure.
And we've worked with him for developing our website, changing our whole marketing premise to be inbound. And so I've been working with him for several years, and I kind of went to him with my woe is me story of what we were trying to accomplish. And so he got involved, and together we created this blueprint. And together, I mean his team and our team. Originally, we were going to call it Beyond Money, but what we really needed it to do to be an experience was have sort of a moving adjective of or a moving verb. And the word get, just adding that get at the front of it, just clicked. And it wasn't taken by anybody else out there in the world. So we nabbed all of the property, the real estate in terms of URLs and social media sites. And then we started the process of actually building it out. And the interesting thing about when we launched, which getting to that launch day, I'm going to tell you, was like a huge day, because it was 3 years in the making. And we really thought that first week we would just have enough traffic to generate interest of joining the movement, because we had different workflows set up for every stage. The first stage was joining the movement, where we'd get their name and email address. And then we would nurture them to take the quiz, savings quiz, and then nurture them to actually meet with a money coach. What we didn't foresee was that it would take off so fast that we were literally having to pull a couple of our market managers aside and say, we need you two to reach out to these first 12 members who have already signed up for meeting with a money coach, and we had only been launched a few days. That was not expected. But it was great. I mean, it was very good, but it was just, we thought we would have more time to really flesh out the back end with the money coach, but in particular the training. We had it all fleshed out. We just wanted to get the training done with all our branch managers. And we didn't get that done until after, a couple days after we launched. And we had to move pretty quick at that, because we didn't have an extra week to nurture people to get that point. They were anxious to get to that point right away, which I guess in the back of my mind, I knew there was a need for it. I just didn't anticipate that there would be so much action on that need so quickly.
The demographic you're after is what? People ages 15 to 30?
No, actually more the older millennial. We're pretty much shooting for 25 to 38, a little bit wider, 21 to 38, 25 to 35 is usually what we're using in terms of targeting.
Okay. So these are millennials who, many of them have quote real close quote jobs, and
And that we did some focus. I mean, we didn't dive into this blindly. We did some focus groups prior with millennials between the ages of 25 and 35 that lived here in South Florida. We did two different separate focus groups. One that were really based. They ended up being an hour long conversations with 30 millennials. That really focused on how they handled their finances, not just banking, but just their overall financial life. And the second focus group really dug into how they banked online. Like, what did they do digitally? What kinds of ways did they search out what they would be looking for? So we did these two different focus groups, and we took the results of those and built out the positioning and the messaging. Because when we started, the idea of Get Beyond Money was literally, you know, we want to help people get beyond money to get to whatever is more important in their life. What we didn't really foresee until we talked to these folks was how stressful they were feeling already at these young ages, and mainly due to student loan debt. But there was just a lot more financial stress in their lives than I had anticipated there being. I just figured that didn't come until you got a little older, like married and have kids and, you know, really got into the different ways your finances can be spread thin. But even at 25, 26 years old, these young adults were already facing sleepless nights of how to afford XYZ. And the second thing that really became apparent was that it wasn't something they were comfortable speaking with. They're speaking about to their friends or even their family. It was sort of like this I don't want to say a shameful secret, but in some of the interviews, it sure seemed like they were really uncomfortable discussing it, and they didn't know who to go to. Like, who do you talk to?
I don't think that's new. I mean, I'm an old baby boomer, and I remember research from 40 years ago that said people are more comfortable talking about their sex lives than their money lives.
Yeah, and we've all heard that in terms of parents talking with their kids about money, that they're not comfortable talking about. They'd rather talk about sex education.
It doesn't surprise me that, you know, do I want to tell you, oh, I had three NSFs last week, and geez, I might get evicted from my apartment. Not really. This isn't a...
I guess I just anticipated that with so much information out there and there, you know, with the internet and being able to even share things anonymously, that they wouldn't, I don't know, that they wouldn't feel like as lost as they seem to feel. You're right, though. We that does go back 40 years, and in my case, same thing. But I guess I just again, this is why we do focus groups, right? Because you don't want to project how you feel and what you think about things onto a different person or a different demographic. So for me, that was sort of a okay, this is still a very concerning thing. Even for this age group, even though they have all this access to information. And we do know that financial literacy is so lacking, and it's not taught in schools, and parents aren't comfortable talking about it. But just trying to, where these folks are turning to for how to get that information is still sort of a mystery to them. They don't know where to turn or where to start. So that's kind of how we built the buyer journey around getting them to, quote unquote, join the movement. So that they can really focus on getting beyond money and getting to a better point in their lives. And it really resonated much quicker than we thought it would. And it is, I was just looking up our numbers. We already have 73 people who've signed up to meet with a money coach since we launched mid-September.
Is that meet in person or meet digitally?
In person.
Whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
That's what I'm saying. Isn't that crazy?
Whoa, no, you're just blowing my mind. Wow, 73 personal meetings. Whoa.
Yes, I know. That's why I'm saying this really, we did not anticipate this kind of reaction. And it was sort of interesting because our branch managers, one of them asked the question, why don't we do these things digitally? And I gave them the psychology behind how when you're sitting in front of somebody, first of all, we have a workbook for these guys to actually write into. And there's psychology that if you put pen to paper, you're much more likely to follow through with goals that you write down than if you type them and then if you say them, blah, blah, blah. So we have this workbook, and some of the branch managers are like, well, why don't you just, you know, send us the PDF and have them fill it out before they come meet with us. I'm like, no, 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 no. That's not the point. The whole point is for you to sit down and for you to be the advocate of for them, because that's part of who we are. That's one of our pillars of our brand value, is that we bring value and we are their advocate. So this is your opportunity to sit there beside them to let them know that they aren't alone in this process, because they're going to be coming up with some scary things. The first couple meetings, you know, the feedback was, yep, these were people really experiencing some scary things. So we work with balance as well. So we've had one person who is actually older. She was in her early 40s, and she had a much deeper problems than just a regular branch manager could tackle. So that's when we were able to actually introduce her with a warm handoff directly to a balance financial counselor, so that she could get the real counseling that she needed. We aren't seeing a lot of that. A lot of these folks are just looking for some, okay, where do I start to start saving for a down payment on a house? And how do I get from being taken at the auto dealership? And, you know, what are the smart ways to save over time so I can still get my Starbucks when I want it, but not feel like I'm wasting money? That's the kind of normal stuff we're seeing. But
folks in it for the credit union to be involved in this.
Relationships and experiences. One of the things that we've had a hard time with is we've been doing so much digital that we're kind of losing that human to human contact. And that's what credit union is, sort of that word of mouth and that bond we're built on. this is giving us that opportunity to re-engage and share that experience back with the person, and in hopes that that will spread. And we're really targeting this at millennials because it's not an audience we've done real well with over the past few years. We haven't had a lot to offer them. That's why we created this. We had Young and Free Florida back in 2012, and since that disbanded, we really haven't had something where we really could connect with that particular age group that would be beneficial for them and that they would see value in it.
You could probably count on your fingers the number of credit unions that have had great success with millennials. There are a few, mainly ones in college towns. So credit unions do have an appeal for millennials. It's just, it's not the most straightforward sale in most of the country.
Yep.
Where do kids go? They go where they see the TV ads, and that means Chase, Bank of America, etc., Capital One. That's also where we shop. I mean, we follow what the TV advertising tells us.
When I was a student at Michigan State in the 80s, the Michigan State Federal Credit Union was the very first introduction to a credit union I had, and I've never gone back. I've never been with any other financial institution. I've never been with a bank. I've always done banking with a credit union, even before I started working for them. I've always loved the credit union philosophy. I feel like I can, when I leave here every day, I feel like I've done good. I'm not sure I could feel that way if I worked for a Bank of America or a bank where profits are the main driver.
Your goal is to recruit new members, I suppose, and also do some new business in the form of car loans and possibly mortgages, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, definitely the products, when we get to that point, are definitely, the hope is that they would, of course, have those products here, get those products from us. But it's also, there's a certain amount of branding that's going into this, that just trying to make sure that we are raising awareness of the brand in this market, which is not, again, when you do a lot of stuff digitally and you're doing things hyper-targeted, we have noticed, like we did a recent survey, and it was in April of this year, and just the brand awareness of Tropical Financial has been slipping a little bit. So not huge, but enough to where we want to make sure that we are doing occasionally some branding out there with general messaging of who we are as an institution, and not just get your car loan from us, but more the overall experience and relationship. So there's a certain amount of branding that is going along with this as well.
If another credit union is listening to this and they say, geez, we'd like to do the same thing, would you make your platform available to other credit unions?
I absolutely would if they aren't competitors.
Right. No, I understand. Yes. That's one of the beautiful things about credit unions. Most, with the exception of Pentagon Federal and Navy, are pretty geographically restricted in their competition.
Right. And the one thing I absolutely love about credit unions is the cooperative nature. I absolutely would love to see somebody else be able to do the same thing. We're only about 7 weeks into this, and we're calling this first 3 months a pilot.
Sure.
Very, very surprised and delighted with these results. And this is actually built this out, again, with Digital Growth Institute in phases. This is kind of phase one. And we have some thoughts of how to introduce additional content outlets like podcasts, different ways to connect with folks to talk about these kinds of issues in a way that's non-threatening. And so this is phase one, and hopefully in the spring of 2020, we'll be able to move into phase two, where we can engage with these folks and spread out a little bit further than what we're doing right now.
Well, what you're tackling is the problem, it's a central problem just about all credit unions face, which is, how do you get a younger demographic? How do you have members who aren't baby boomers? And no one really has the secret formula for succeeding at this, but you're nuts if you ain't trying.
Right.
And you're trying, whether this succeeds or not, who knows? But it's a valid attempt, which is why it's worth thinking about exploring, and why reinvent the wheel if I'm a credit union and I can get some of your content and design, et cetera, and throw it up on my own website or something like that. I mean, why not? It's worth exploring.
Right.
It's worth kicking the idea around and see where it all ends up. Now, are you finding, your early days in this, but are you getting any sense of what content people are engaging with, what they're ignoring.
Interestingly, the I'm not saying anything specific to a product, but the general blog articles are getting some traction. Our mission page is getting traction. It looks like really it's just the interest in the movement itself, why we're doing what we're doing, taking the financial quiz, the savings quiz, and scheduling the financial review. Like, it looks like right now we've had actually more people scheduling the financial review meeting than have taken the savings quiz, which is interesting because that's a step.
Wow.
Yeah.
The
it looks like 73
meeting.
Have scheduled a meeting or have asked to schedule a meeting, and only 66 have taken the quiz. 102 have joined the movement. I believe those are up-to-date numbers.
That's because I took the quiz, and the quiz does not involve any intimacy or disclosure of anything significant. Going in for a face-to-face with a financial advisor is a whole different level of intimacy.
It really is. And the workbook was designed by Digital Growth Institute, was designed by James Robert Lay. He took a lot of the principles that he uses in his industry sort of growth ideas and sort of made them in for an individual. And they really do work. They really do transfer very nicely. And just the whole idea of being able to work on that with this person, and they have something that they can take away. And we have all this these different communications set up based on what they do in terms of after they are done meeting with one of our branch managers, then they go in and do sort of a post-meeting form they fill out on HubSpot, and that sort of dictates what the next step is going to be in terms of our communication with them. It also gives them the opportunity to connect with this person, to do follow-ups and things like that. So, yeah, it originally we had thought about just having a simple checklist that the branch manager could go over with the individual, and James Robert Lay took it to a whole new level that is actually working out incredibly well.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see, and you'll begin to see maybe 60, 90 days down the road, if people who go through that process are referring their friends to it, because their friends are almost certainly in the same boat.
That's sort of the idea. That's what we're really kind of hoping for, that it will this is sort of a whole new way of conducting the traditional word of mouth types of spreading the news about credit unions, as like we used to do in the past, doing it sort of a digital way, but there is a human touch in there.
Well, I think one thing that's been to some extent detrimental to credit unions is that the history was that they were very poor at recruiting new members. They got new members because of a seg. So you got a job at XYZ factory. Someone said to you, you know, here's this credit union, you should join it. You said, okay, fine, I'll do that. Now credit unions have to battle for new members, and they have to battle with folks like Chase, who are really good at that battle.
Yeah.
Does Chase
and have the dollars to do it too?
Well, I'm not convinced Chase really wants these kids, though.
You're probably right. Yeah.
What intrigues me is that we offer so little financial education in America, and yet between student loans, and it's not just student loans, it's kids oftentimes aren't getting jobs that meet their financial expectations, even when they do all the right things. They graduate from school with decent grades, decent school, and still they're not getting that six-figure Wall Street job. You know, they're just not going to do it in most cases. So they're left to struggle. You know, how do you do this? And there's not a lot of education on that. There's a lot of ways about a lot of advice on how to spend a lot of money if you have it.
Boy, I know that.
But if you don't have it, not much is happening. And historically, credit unions were good at offering advice. You know, I remember talking with Jim Blaine at North Carolina State Employees Credit Union, and he was just as proud when the credit union said to somebody, "Nope, we ain't going to lend you money for a Mercedes. We will lend you money for a Ford. And then we'll talk to you about what to do with that savings." Jim thought that was the best possible thing. That's what he wanted to hear his employees say when it was appropriate, of course. He wasn't trying to railroad people in the choices that weren't right for him. It's like, man, you can't really afford that Mercedes. We're sure somebody can get a loan, but it's bad. You don't want to do it.
But our job also, and this is something we did in our training, is not to pass judgment. It's not our job to pass judgment on what they want out of life. It's our job to show them the realities and let them make the decisions. But that was another thing that came through loud and clear in our focus groups, is they don't want to have anybody passing judgments, no waggling of the finger in the face of, I know better, like a parent would do or a teacher would do. They want someone that they can just trust will be a judgment-free zone and let them know what's possible and what they need to do to get to where they want to go. And then they make the decision themselves.
Before we go, think hard about how you can help support this podcast so we can do more interviews with more thoughtful leaders in the credit union world. What we're trying to figure out here in these podcasts is what's next for credit unions. What can they do to really, really, really make a difference in the financial scene? Can't all be mega banks, can it? It's my hope it won't all be mega banks. It'll always be a place for credit unions. That's what we're discussing here. So figure out how you can help. Get in touch with me. This is rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Robert McGarvey again. That's rjmcgarvey@gmail.com. Get in touch. We'll figure out a way that you can help. We need your support. We want your support. We thank you for your support. The CU 2.0 Podcast.